Today on Movie Rollers, we talk about The Drama, I Swear, and Michael. It's time for Movie Rollers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And yes, D as well.
Movie Rollers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greetings.
Greetings.
This is take two.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Due to a production error, Joe pressed the wrong button somehow. We were recording.
We had a really good discussion.
We didn't have a really good discussion.
You should have just gone along.
That far.
But anyway. The best discussion, which
ever.
Will never be recaptured.
Yeah.
But we were talking about the reason that it's been a while since we put a podcast out, and that was indeed because Rashmi and I were travelling. We were in the UK for 3 weeks for a family wedding.
Which was wonderful.
It was super fun. And so that was super fun.
Yes.
And now, Yasti, I think you're going to be
you're
away
be
for
traveling.
A while. So
we're going to
cram in some movie wallahs while we can.
Yes.
Yes.
Two podcasts to review today, to do today. So I'm excited to talk about all of these. We are on a time crunch, so we're going to go straight to business. That business being our usual segment of I can't find anything to watch on video on demand. Why do we do this? We do this so that you can sit down in your couch in an evening without any stress and pick one of the fine shows or movies that we are
three choices every podcast mostly.
So Rashmi, what you got?
Okay, I got a series on Netflix. It is the series. They're about 35, 40 minutes each. Very easy to watch. 6 episodes. The show is called Being Gordon Ramsay. It is about the chef, worldwide phenomenon now. Gordon Ramsay has many, many businesses and TV shows like Hell's Kitchen and The F Word, and he's got Kitchen Nightmares. And basically, this is a year in his life leading up to the opening of his flagship 5 restaurants, including a culinary school, at the top of this amazing building in the city of London called Bishopsgate. So it's a bit of an infomercial, if I'm honest, but it's still a little peek behind the curtain. And it's really interesting to see how he is.
Is it only about him or it's about the...
It's the opening of the building. So you're, 6 weeks out, 5 weeks out, 4 weeks out. It's kind of, leading up to the opening night of the restaurant. And it's got mainly his wife and 2 of his children and then 2 of his younger children. So very interesting, very easy to watch. We watched this in, we watched 2 episodes a night. We could have watched more.
They're like 30, 40 minute episodes.
Yeah, very easy to watch.
I agree. I mean,
entertaining.
I enjoyed it. I mean, it kind of felt a little bit like the Victoria Beckham documentary, where it's clearly aimed at kind of boosting their profile.
Absolutely.
I felt like I learned a lot about Ramsay. He's everywhere, but we don't feel like we know him very much. So it's a carefully selected, carefully chosen and
curated.
Carefully edited program. But it still shows that he's kind of a legit mogul.
Yeah. Right?
He's a restaurateur, but he's a chef at heart. He's trying to portray himself as a family man too. But well worth a watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you have any interest in Ramsay.
Yeah. Yazdi, what's your pick?
So my pick is a movie that I stumbled upon, because I was being cheap and I was seeing how much I could watch without, I canceled my subscription to Hulu and Disney Plus, which we are about to resubscribe. But anyway, so Tubi, I really like Tubi because it has, it's completely free. There's just a couple of ads which come along. And I saw this movie and then it looked very interesting to me. And then I read up about it and then I got even more interested. So Stephen Graham, he's the guy who was in Adolescence.
Yes,
he played
yes.
The dad.
Yes.
And he was also in, I think he wrote the first episode of Adolescence. I can see the kernel of where his idea for Adolescence came from. And it came from this movie, which is called Boiling Point.
Oh, the chef one.
Correct.
Yes.
So it's in the cooking theme. And Boiling Point is a single take, almost 2-hour film about a chef trying to manage like one of the worst days, you know, in the restaurant. It's shot in a restaurant in London. You could say it's like The Bear. We've already seen it in the
multiple episodes.
Yes.
But, a lot like The Bear.
But this predates The Bear, and I don't think it's playing any games where somebody walks into a dark room and then they are, during that time, they're switching the take. It seems like one genuine take, and it's got at least, I don't know, 20 different, you know, speaking parts, and a lot happens during that one night. It doesn't end well. It kind of is depressing, but it's still, I think, a technical marvel. So if you like, you know, like bravado filmmaking, then you should watch completely free Boiling Point on Tubi.
Tubi's a great service, Tubi's by the way.
Yeah.
Like, since you switched us onto it, I'm like, I keep flicking through, and there's some really good stuff.
They have Korean films, Asian films, Indian films. They have all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, really.
Not to be confused with Mubi.
With Mubi, yes. Which Tubi. Is a paid service.
Which is a paid service that had the substance and things like that. Yeah.
Tubi, T-U-B-I. Yes.
I'm surprised there isn't some sort of a lawsuit. Maybe, are they related?
I don't know. Maybe Mubi is Tubi's paid service. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We can find out.
Yeah.
We'll find out. All right. And my pick is really lazy. And I say it's really lazy. My picks are always lazy. But it's because it's a movie that we saw earlier this year. And that movie is Send Help. It's coming out on Disney and Hulu. In May.
Mm-hmm.
And to date, I would say it's among my top movies of the year already. I'm pretty sure it's going to be one of my top movies of the year, regardless. So rather than prattle on and on and on about how it's worth watching, if you go back a few episodes of Movie Wallahs, I think it was episode...
Maybe three episodes ago?
Yeah, maybe a little more. It was like one of the first episodes of the year, like episode 588, something like that. You will hear our review of Send Help, where all of us wholeheartedly recommended the movie. So
it's so much fun. We won't rattle on. It's so much fun. It's super entertaining. The only person I wouldn't recommend it to is if you are queasy about some extreme violence, but even that is used almost comically.
Yeah.
So it's such a great plot. It's such a great, you'll have a great time.
Yeah.
Just watch it.
Yeah.
And that's Movie Wallahs episode 586. So it's right there on our website or in our podcast feed. Go check it out.
Yeah. And while we're doing that, I did check. Mubi and Tubi might sound similar, but they're actually completely separate companies with very different models. No ownership or corporate relationship between them.
Wow.
Mubi is a curated cinephile-focused platform. And Tubi, which Yazdi loves, is a free ad-supported mass streaming platform.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would sue if I was
Mubi and Tubi.
But no, that's great. All right.
They're even spelled the same way.
M-U-B-I and T-U-B-I. Yep.
Well, that's because you can't get any other, well, correctly spelled name as a URL if you're launching a service. Everyone does like, it would be like Movify or...
Yeah. Yeah.
Movilify, you know.
Okay.
They always have to come up with these weird things. All right. Three movies to talk about then. The Drama, I Swear, and Michael, or as Yazdi said earlier today, Michael, I Swear. The Drama.
Yes. Yes.
Which order?
I Swear.
Okay, let's begin with I Swear then.
Okay, so unfortunately, Joe and I didn't get to see this. I really want to see this. This is the movie that won the BAFTA for Best Actor. So this is set in Scotland. It's a true life story of someone called John Davidson who was diagnosed with Tourette's at 15. And he was targeted as insane by his peers. He struggled with a condition few had witnessed. And, you know, he's campaigning for better understanding and acceptance of the condition of Tourette's as an adult. And he finds his life's purpose and accepted his MBE from the Queen in 2019. So I believe that this guy was actually in the audience at the BAFTAs. And if you were watching that live stream when
there was some controversy.
Michael B. Jordan and Delroy Lindon were presenting an award, there was some noise in the background. And apparently it was this guy. Mm. So, yes. So, Yazdi, tell us, is this worth rushing out to see? This came out in the UK last year. And we're just getting it in the US now. Just got released.
I think it's required viewing for everyone.
Oh,
and I...
Yay.
It is. It's just... You know, it's hard to do a film like this without coming off pedantic or patronizing or glib. It's about, you know, this person prevailing against great odds, you know, facing physical difficulties with Tourette's, etc. But I think it's done with so much objectivity, and yet it doesn't shy away from things. It's shocking to believe that, you know, in the 80s, in a small rural town in Scotland, nobody had heard of Tourette's.
Right.
But I can swear there are probably millions of little villages in India where nobody's heard of Tourette's. And this little kid who is like a emerging soccer, soccer star, you know, they even have like a hunting talent come in for the game, and then he just starts doing these physical twitches and he starts swearing. And his parents are convinced he's doing that to sabotage himself and that he is seeking attention and nobody at the school understands him.
Right.
And then, you know, it goes through all of his life. I think I really liked it because I think this is the movie we need right now, because it's ultimately about kindness, right? And giving consideration to those we don't understand, or who may at first glance may even seem hateful or contemptuous, right? If somebody is saying like really,
rude,
vitriolic, swearing words at you, your first reaction is to kind of fight back or get angry or to shout at them. And the only reason this man came to be at a place where he's now, you know, essentially an advocate for people's understanding of Tourette's is because he had a handful of people, two or three people in his life, who saw past his physical afflictions and his inability to stop swearing and look past him. And, you know, it's the kindness of those two or three people in his life who allowed him to prevail. So I think, you know, I don't know. I think the world is burning right now, and I think this is the kind of hopeful movie that we need, which tells us that if we consider who at first seems to be an enemy with a little bit more kindness, then, you know, we all benefit. So I was tremendously moved. I was so moved I couldn't even talk when I came out of the theater.
Wow.
And you know, there's a lot of things which happened through his life. And, you know, biopics are hard to do. Biopics are really hard. They can come off really glib or, you know, putting a person on a pedestal. This one does none of those things. Everything is handled beautifully. Really, everybody should watch it. There isn't a single person I would recommend not watch it.
And how much does it talk about the disease itself? Because, again, you're right. We didn't really hear about Tourette's until about the last 10 to 12 years, it feels like. And certainly we've been watching. There's a great show on... I think it's like Bravo or E, one of those, called Balin Out Loud, about there's a young lady here in the US, I think she's kind of early 20s, who has Tourette's and became a very famous TikToker, Instagrammer, and they did a show about her, and she's adorable, and it follows her as well, but it's a really difficult affliction. TLC, thank you, the Learning Channel. Yeah. So does it talk about Tourette's as a disease?
It does pretty late into the film, which kind of follows his own learning the disease as he found out.
Right.
And then, you know, he's now a pretty strong advocate for it. So we see some of his, you know, speeches and what he's saying.
Right.
Of course, the acting is amazing. Robert Aramayo, who plays the grown-up version of this individual, and then the kid who plays the 15 or 16 year old version, they both do remarkable jobs. But I think it's almost like every person, every actor in this is so good. I think everybody should watch this film. It's lovely, and I can understand why it got released early in the UK, because they wanted awards consideration. I personally believe
they won,
and I personally believe if this movie had been released in the US last year as well, then it possibly would have won, at least for best screenplay or other things.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I forgot to mention, it's written, directed by Kirk Jones, starring Robert Aramayo as John Davidson, Peter Mullen, Maxine Peake, Shirley Henderson, whole bunch of other people.
Yeah.
It's quite an unknown cast, I would say.
Yeah, it makes me wonder. So forget Tourette's, some kids have ADHD, some kids have learning difficulties. How often do parents, to their credit, jump to conclusion to believe that they have a kid who is either, either mentally challenged, or they think they have a kid who is just acting up?
Yeah.
Right? Just acting up to be contrary to them. And how much we are losing in the world, because those people, if they don't get those individuals, if they don't get diagnosed, then they go down this track, right?
Right.
In the case of this individual,
they can be expelled from school or
get an
education.
In centuries gone by, they would have probably been thought of being possessed.
Right.
Correct.
It's a very interesting disorder.
Yeah.
The way that they speak out these thoughts, and they're not even conscious thoughts. It's it's fascinating.
I'll just say one other thing. After I saw the movie, I went online and looked, and there is this controversy which remains unsolved, or nobody agrees on what the truth is. But there is a belief amongst one group of people that when a person with Tourette swears, that there is a short circuiting in their brain, right? That it's the desire to say the most inappropriate thing. That it just comes out. There is a more controversial group of people who believe that a person with Tourette's disease will only use the N-word because in their mind they are racist. So how would the idea of the N-word even come in their mind unless either they saw somebody else use it in a racist? So I guess the two theories are like, do you still have any blame on the person who has this thing come out? For example, like if somebody uses really bad language, are they just relaying their inner thoughts? Are they truly in their head thinking about those things? Or is it completely involuntary? And nobody knows. And I think it's a fascinating thing to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, we could debate that. I mean, from the little I know, and I will say, the Baylen Out Loud series on TLC is probably as close as I've gotten to understanding. I've not studied it. I don't know anyone with it. I don't know. I haven't, read up on it, but, it seems to me that it's the former. It's the,
it's just a short circuit.
She'll be speaking with her father who's got no hair. So, while she's talking to him, she'll yell out, "You're bald." And there's no way that she's trying to hurt him in those moments. Right. It's just, that's the brain kind of this misfiring.
Yeah.
It's a fascinating way. In many ways, it's a fascinating disorder because of the brain dysfunction, the specific brain dysfunction at play.
And how good it's got us talking about it, right?
It sounds like
what's
fantastic.
What's the score, Yasti?
Yeah.
A very, very easy 8.5 out of 10, which I'm going to back down to an 8, but everybody should watch this. It is the movie we need right now. I get choked up even thinking about it. It's just so beautifully done as these things go. Yeah.
All right. Yay.
All right, that was the movie I Swear. We're going to talk about, should we go to the drama or Michael?
I think we were going to go to the drama.
Let's go to the drama. So I'll introduce this very briefly because I think this one needs a little bit of care. I haven't seen any trailers or promotional material about this, but all I'll say is...
There are no spoilers in the ethosphere, just so you know.
So I'll read then from the Rotten Tomatoes description, because that way I know it's safe. A happily engaged couple is put to the test when an unexpected turn sends their wedding week off the rails. This movie is directed by Christopher Borgli and stars Zendaya and Robert Pattinson.
It's almost impossible to talk about this movie.
I realized while I was watching it that I read a piece in, of all things, The Economist, before before seeing it, and I read it while we were in the UK. Ah. It was talking about the fact that the movie had offended a large group of people.
Oh. So,
anyway, I'm going to stop there because I think, you know, this is one of those movies where we do have to dance a little around the movie's central conceit, but I think we can also talk a little bit about what just happened here. So, yeah, they're all preparing for a wedding, and then a series of events takes place. So, guys, what did you think of the drama?
I loved it. I loved it. I think it's simple at its core in terms of the one idea that's explored, and it's executed really, really well. And props to Robert Pattinson. He's so good in this movie. This is a really hard role to do, and he really impressed me. I really like this movie.
Yes, Lee.
So I think I love this film too, and I've been thinking about it nonstop, yeah. And I've argued with people, and I love...
That's, you know, not like you.
That's not like me at all. But, you know, if you look at, like, the spoiler-free reviews of people on Letterboxd for the drama, you will see people on every end of the spectrum, you know, and we can talk offline about it, where they're like, person A is like evil, whereas somebody's like, no, person A is the, you know, person X is the evil person, whatever. So there's two things I want to say. The script is amazing. The script is so agile. In fact, the first 15 minutes, it's like almost like a collage,
yes,
of several things happening. And I'm like, where is this movie going? What's going on? It seems to be kind of free floating in the air until it kind of settles down on its central provocation. I think the entire movie is a provocation. You are presented with, let's call it, an ethical question at the center of the movie, and then uses that provocation as fertile ground and then goes with it. So that's what I like. And I also like that the pacing of the movie is so good, right? It's leading up to the wedding of Zendaya and Robert Pattinson. And as things are happening based on this provocation, I'm going to keep calling it just the provocation, you know, it becomes increasingly more hectic and breakneck, and it's almost like hurtling towards the end. And I like that a movie can kind of bring you to the edge of your seat. There are a lot of people who have issues with the provocation itself, and we can talk about that. Joe?
Yeah, no. Another Camion is another fanboy of this movie. I think, look, this is one of those movies where everything is intentionally a little overcooked.
Yeah.
Right? So the provocation is overcooked. The responses totally to the provocation are overcooked. The outcomes of the responses are overcooked. Everything kind of boils over in the way that ordinarily in lesser hands would just be frustrating and kind of silly. Like, no one would really do that, right? No one's really going to behave that way. You have to kind of, well, in my mind at least, you know, the provocation, isn't necessarily, it's like a thought crime, right? More than, again, I want to be careful here. It's not necessarily something someone did. It's about the person that they may or may not reveal themselves to be. But, and I hope that that's not too spoilery. And if it is, tell me, because I'll cut it. But the intention here is to just, you know, create this little universe where everything is kind of, you know, boiling over. I did, like you, yes, the really enjoy all the little jump cuts at the beginning.
Yes.
Because I think the way that was done, again, was done purely in service of the narrative, right? It's like scene reveal, explanation, but it all has some integrity. It didn't feel like the director was doing it for any other reason other than to explain a chronology and a timeline of how this relationship came to be, which is really important that you understand that to then understand.
And it continues to do that throughout the movie. It's almost like I was going to say the editing really impressed me because you almost hear the character have a thought, and then it's kind of like what goes on in their head as they're thinking about that thought. So it was a very clever device That was a lot of movie shot, it feels like. Exactly. And then it was condensed into like 20 seconds, not even like 10 seconds of a thought that we get to see in the character's mind, which was mind-blowing.
And there's also a lot of flashbacks. And that's why I'm thinking this must have been a pain to film.
Because
there's a lot to film, which just shows up for a few seconds afterwards. Yeah. I also think this is a very difficult acting challenge. And I think both Robert Pattinson and Zendaya are terrific in this. But for me, the thought I came back with, and you guys can agree or disagree with me, is that Paul Thomas Anderson was right all along. And let me explain why.
I know exactly what you're going to say, and I agree.
Yeah, because Paul Thomas Anderson put in the lead in his movie Licorice Pizza, this unknown actress who was Alana Haim, who was this indie
singer.
And Alana Haim she's been in a lot of movies since. She had a small itty bitty part in One Battle After Another as well. But in this movie, she plays Rachel.
The friend.
The friend.
Yeah,
one half of their best friends. And I think Alana Haim, I hope that's not how she's like in real life. Anyway, I'm not going to judge. But I think she has the hardest job to do, and she just knocks it out of the park. She's very, very good there. I also like the fact that it kind of tries to get to a conclusion. I'm not sure I would agree with that conclusion, but I was so enthralled by that point that I didn't care how the movie concluded. I was just happy to have been through this whole process. There's one other thing I would say, and I will let you guys talk. A lot of people who don't like the movie, and I'm going to be very careful how I say this, a lot of people who don't like the movie say that they don't understand the Zendaya character and they don't understand her motivations and not enough is explained and she remains a cipher. That may all be true, but I think the movie is intentionally seen from the first frame through the last, through the eyes of the Robert Pattinson character.
Agreed.
So by definition, he would not know what exactly was going on in her mind at any given time, including when she was younger. So I'm not buying that argument that, you know, that you're taking an easy way out. You're just dropping a bomb and then not explaining it. I think the intention all along was, if you were Robert Pattinson, how would you react? And I think the movie is truthful by that measure.
Yeah, I agree.
Well said. Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing more to add.
No, I think, you know, the controversy that I've heard around the movie, you know, came straight from a newspaper. So, you know, I'll leave it there. But I think, you know, the provocation that the movie is based around, you know, people take issue with. And I think it's a serious issue, but this movie is not exploring that at all. This provocation could be any number of different things.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not about the thing that it's about. It's
how it is about it.
I wasn't going to say that, but no, that as soon as it came out of my mouth, it like went straight back to that Roger Ebert quote. It's not about how something is. It's not about what the thing is about. It's how it's about what it's about.
Right.
It's nothing to do with that. That's a MacGuffin of the biggest sort. Right. It is all about putting the characters into a place where they have to have discussions about the nature of who they are as people. And for that, you have to stir up the pot. And so they use something.
Although, to be fair, I agree it could have been anything, but this scriptwriter has picked the absolute worst of the worst, right?
I think there's worse things. I really do. Right. I think there's many other things that they could have said. And that in some ways, you know, one of there's another option in the screenplay, directly from the screenplay, that I think could have been a worse option. You know,
this is
mentioned
true.
By one of the other characters.
Yes. This is
true. So, you know, to me, it's not about that thing. It's just that was the best lever to use.
And I do like the fact that it creates almost like you think it's going to turn into this debate about that thing, and actually, although they kind of skirt around it a little bit, that's not what it's about. Yeah. It's truly about how two people react when they find out something about the other person that they didn't know, right? And it's so it's, I just love that it's about that.
Yeah.
And it plays with this at several levels. I think the whole movie is a test of what would you do in this situation? From the first half hour to the end of the movie, there is a whole subplot, and this is not a spoiler, Sam. There's a whole subplot where they find out that their DJ, they think they see the DJ doing cocaine on a street corner, and that gets them so upset. And I'm like, if I'm getting married, I don't care what my DJ does in their after hours as long as they're a good DJ. But this seems to really upset a lot of people. Like, how can we have this person in our wedding if they're doing drugs on the street? So it has so many provocative, interesting things to talk about.
That, even the way that they meet is controversial. Correct. And then what's going on is there's so many little moral dilemmas, little explosions, which don't compare to anything when you find out what the main one is. So anyway, let's wrap this one up. Joe, what's your score for this one?
This is a really solid 8 out of 10. It's fun. It's challenging. It's intention. And again, I'm going to keep going back to the pulpiness of this movie. Like, it's pressure cooked. It's like, you know, there's nothing... you're going to stick your hand in it and get goop out. There's no, it's like, it's overly boiled, and that makes it sound terrible. But no, it's intentionally done that so that we can have the situations and the characters that we have. You know, as long as you accept that concession, which normally I'm resistant to. So I'll be honest. I mean, to me, this is a movie that ordinarily I would find frustrating. I really enjoyed it because it was so well crafted. 8 out of 10.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah, 8.5 out of 10. I commend original scripts. I commend people who take risks. This script is playing with you the whole time. It is, like you said, it's completely playing with you. It's overcooking everything. But you know what? I enjoyed being played by the script. I kind of came away like, fine, play me, right? I'm happy to be played if you're going to do this so well. There's 100 things I can say about this movie. The costumes. I want to find out which that New York City apartment where they're living in, which is amazing.
Lovely, yes.
The clothing, everything. And we didn't even talk about Robert Pattinson, how good he is.
He's so good.
I did say it right at the beginning.
You did say it right. By the way, a lot of people think that Zendaya is a supporting actor in this movie and it's Robert Pattinson's movie.
I don't disagree with that.
Maybe
I don't disagree with that.
It's certainly told from his point of view.
Yeah, I loved it.
So all those people who complain that movies are derivative, that it's sequels, that there's nothing clever or intelligent or thought-provoking, watch the drama. Most of our listeners, you'll probably watch it on streaming. What I would also additionally recommend is there is a certain joy from watching this movie in the theater because you are part of a group of people who are reacting to pretty outrageous situations and, you know, hearing people's nervous laughters and people's anger while different things were playing out for me was as entertaining as the movie itself.
Yeah, it was great to see at the cinema.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, 8, 8, 8.
Did
score? I score? Oh, yeah. Mine's also an 8. Yes, okay. 8. I was thinking in my head already, 8, 8, 8. Okay. It's great.
Yes. Up there as one of the better movies of the year. Already.
It really is. These, you know, it's not in a dissimilar vein from The Help. Not The Help.
Send Help.
The Send Help. It's got that same kind of irony and,
I see that,
you know, like sarcasm and... But all characters are grey. There's no one who's good or bad. They're all on that kind of like...
It's played a little less for laughs, I think.
Yeah.
Send Help, they go out.
Yeah, yeah. Out. But there were some very funny moments I thought was fantastic.
But to Yazdi's point, it was nervous laughter.
Yeah.
I was laughing because it felt in some ways, walls closing in.
Yes.
Woody Allen.
Yes.
Character in battle type moments.
Yeah. We didn't even mention there was another good side character, the Misha character, and that whole scene is so funny. It's great. Anyway.
I also like it because the movie is ultimately about the unknowable nature of human beings.
Yeah.
You may be with someone for a long time. And you will never fully know them. And based on what you find, is that going to negate everything else you know about that person?
Right.
Yeah. So anyway. Yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay. Last film.
Michael.
Yes. So I will introduce this. So director Antoine Fuqua, who is famous for winning a bunch load of Oscars for the movie Training Day with Denzel Washington. He's done so many movies since. The Equalizer movies, Olympus Has Fallen, King Arthur, etc. He takes on directing reins for the biopic of none other than Michael Jackson. And this is, I believe, an authorized, fully authorized retelling or telling of the early life of Michael Jackson. His estate has, you know, given full carte blanche on how things are depicted in this.
And his family are some of the producers, I think.
Correct.
Including his son.
Correct, yes. So which speaks to, you know, yeah. This is not an unauthorized biopic. It's written by John Logan. The director, as I said, is Antoine Fuqua. And it looks at the early life of Michael Jackson, I believe coming up all the way to his performance of Bad in 1980-something.
Eight.
1988. The movie stars Jafar Jackson, who I believe is his nephew, as the lead role as Michael Jackson. And then Nia Long as Catherine Jackson, his mom, and Coleman Domingo as Joseph Jackson, his dad. I wonder if Miss Janet makes an appearance in this story at all.
Oh,
okay. Anyway, the movie has been out. I haven't had a chance to see it. The only controversy I've heard about it is that the movie completely sidesteps, you know, the sexual assault allegations against Michael later in his life. But you guys have both seen it. You're fans. What do you think about it?
Look,
the biggest Michael fan amongst us.
Yeah, probably. No, look, I mean, Michael Jackson's a very controversial character over the years because in the 80s, he was a megastar on like the likes of which, to quote our president, we've never seen before. But he really was. For me, personally, he was kind of a hero, right? Like we were all there when, you know, the Thriller and the Michael and the Billie Jean videos dropped. And like, you know, at the time, the world was completely obsessed with this enigmatic, secretive, uber talented performer. So, you know, this is the movie of that version of Michael Jackson. And that's the thing that you kind of have to, immediately, you have to dispense with any sort of an objective telling of his life. To me, in many ways, this is the same vein as the Bohemian Rhapsody biopic of Freddie Mercury. We had the Amy Winehouse movie, Amy, last year, the Rocket Man. Mm-hmm. You know, they take their protagonist, their star, their target, I guess, and they do pedestalize
them. Put them on, yeah.
And that's exactly what has happened here. As a movie, it works because it's fun. It has a very Lifetime feel to it. You know, the performances aren't amazing, but the atmosphere of the movie in a big screen with the Michael Jackson themes, the Quincy Jones music, you know, the Jackson 5 music from back in the day, all really lent themselves to kind of like a theater show performance. The audience was so into this movie. I was amazed that the audience was as into this movie. I think we saw it on opening weekend. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you go with the fans, it's great. You know, I'll stop there because I think there's a lot of things to not like about this movie. But overall, I think as a film, as a theatre going experience, is actually quite fun.
Yeah, what Joe said. Unfortunately, I think it's too Lifetime.
Mm.
And Hallmark. It's so sterile. I think if you were to reclassify this movie as the Joseph Jackson movie, that might align your expectations a little
more. Coleman Domingo
played by Coleman Domingo. I think if you reframed the movie as the Joseph Jackson movie, that might actually be a better way to market this movie. Because really, at its core, it's mostly about that relationship between Michael Jackson and his father. And in that vein, then you can say, okay, well, we're not going to mention all of the other controversial stuff. And it might give you a better score and make it less Hallmark. Because there's nothing bitey in this. There's nothing controversial in this. It is an infomercial for Michael Jackson. It's interesting that it kind of highlights three or four pivotal male relationships. One was with his bodyguard, one's with his father, and then one's with his his main lawyer. And they're featured so prominently that I was kind of thinking the movie was going in another direction, and it didn't go in that direction. But it's got very little bite. It's empty calories. The music is really amazing to listen to on a big screen. Watching his nephew redo the Thriller video, redo the Billie Jean video, do those dance sequences. It's loud and it's great and it's really fun to listen to. But as a movie, it's just hot air.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on all the problems I was going to...
Is the music the original music? Or
it seems like it.
Or he's re-sung it?
No, it seems like it's original music, but who knows?
Yeah. To me, it sounded original. Whether he mimed it or reperformed them, I don't know.
The dancing is incredible.
It felt authentic.
Yeah, Jafar Jackson has done an incredible job of inhabiting Michael Jackson. Of course, you're constantly looking and saying, that's not Michael Jackson. But how they've done the movement and the dancing is phenomenal.
Okay. Yeah, it's... Look, I mean, I stumbled upon a discussion of this in the British newspaper, The Times of London, in which they cite Antoine Fuqua, and they're like, well, you know, and they interview him, and they're like, why doesn't this movie go into those things? And his response was, well, these are allegations. These were never proven in a court of law. And the newspaper counter argues, well, there were a lot of settlements of the allegations. And he said, well, that doesn't mean they were true. So they've definitely taken a specific point of view about, you know, that to them, Michael was this special, uniquely talented, individual.
Yeah.
And any of his, shortcomings, they say are basically, you know, accusations without basis. So
sure.
If you take that perspective, that's the movie you're going to make.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they're doing that because it's found in the movie's funded by the Jackson estate, which it is, you know, effectively becomes kind of this is their attempt to memorialize Michael and sweep some of the other stuff that we saw under the rug.
Yeah.
To me, again, that's problematic in some ways. I wish you'd almost taken them on in some ways.
Yeah.
And maybe given a different side of the story. If you truly believe that those things are baseless, then go there, right? Like, tell your side of the story, so that we understand why it is that you think that this guy is still, you know, without controversy. They opted not to do that, and that's fair. That's their artistic choice, and it's their money.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me that they stop at 1988, which is kind of the pinnacle of Michael Jackson's career.
Is there going to be a Michael 2?
It's kind of weird, right? They stop at literally 1988.
It's done so well at the box office. I would imagine that there's some desire by producers somewhere to do a Michael 2, but I doubt it because I think that
what's
second
left
stage,
to say,
yeah,
and what's left to
the,
say
the not the asymptote. What's the peak of his the peak of his popularity, and the peak of his, like, you know, mega stardom was Thriller.
Yeah.
Right? The best-selling album of all time.
Yeah.
He achieved things like getting onto MTV as a black performer that had never been done before. They talk about that. The album Thriller was this, you know, worldwide phenomenon. And I don't think he ever achieved those same heights with subsequent albums. So, they finished at the high point.
Yeah.
And that's the choice they made.
Score.
So look, I mean, is it a great movie? No, it really isn't. I mean, I don't think performance-wise there's anything to talk about here. The wonderful Coleman Domingo is doing his best work with fairly clunky dialogue, I think. So again, you can see him almost battling with a poorly written script to try and, you know, put something forward as a character. It's not great from that perspective, but it was a good time at the movies with an audience. And so, you know, I'm going to give it a kind of a middling kind of 6 out of 10. I can't tell you not to see this if you like Michael Jackson and his music, especially the era of the Jackson 5 all the way up to Thriller. Because it's such a one. It's like, again, go back to Bohemian Rhapsody, the movie. It was really fun seeing those songs played with a big audience and, you know,
alive in a loud theater.
And people were having fun with that, and I have to count myself as one among them. But it's not a wonderful run out, rush out and see movie if you're going to see it for the movies. Like, if you're not a Michael Jackson fan,
yeah,
if
don't
you're
bother.
Not into the music, you'll see a fairly, you'll see kind of a B movie here.
Yeah. Same. My score is 6 out of 10 as well. I mean, again, I would know what you're getting. This is Hallmark, you know, this is Hallmark territory. But it's fun to watch the music.
It's made $464 million worldwide in its first 10 days.
Wow.
I'm sure there will be, you know, Michael, the later years.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean,
yeah.
This really is the definition of fan service.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Like, right. This is for the fans.
You know,
it's by the family, for the fans. It's their gift to the fans who, you know, maybe feel, you know, cheated by these allegations. Antoine Fuqua, you know, even calls into play, you know, he plays the race card in his interview where he says, you know, this is another attempt to bring down a prominent black figure. You can make those arguments, right? The movie's not about those, but, you know, he's just saying, we're going to ignore all that stuff because this is the greatness and the talent. And he was no matter what you say, he was an amazingly unique talent.
Yeah, he was. He was.
And I'm not at all defending sexual assault, but I will just say this, that if we were to judge every genius artist based on their personal lives, we wouldn't have any artists to look at.
That's true.
That's a rabbit hole.
But my point is, if we cannot separate their craft from their whatever's going on in their personal life, then we would be left with very little art to admire, be it music or theater or cinema or whatever. So again, yeah. I'm not even justifying it.
No.
I'm just saying, regardless of what he did or didn't do, I think the genius of his music.
If you're interested in that topic, there's a wonderful subreddit on the site Reddit called "Why Were We Okay with This?"
Right,
and they have a constant stream of like celebrities from years gone by doing things that today would be completely inappropriate. This isn't exactly the same thing, to be honest. But yeah, I mean, a lot of, you know, if you're a Rolling Stones fan, then know that, you know, one of the band members is effectively married somebody underage.
Like, yeah.
You know, a pedophile. How can we support that? That's just, you know, this is like crazy stuff.
But I think my mind has the complexity to say this person was a deplorable pedophile and this person wrote one of the best songs of all time.
Yeah. Yes, D. I'm saying I don't disagree with you.
Right.
But
that's a hard place to
be. It's a hard place to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
Okay.
Let's.
But I don't disagree with you.
Yeah.
No.
Two things can be true, right?
Yeah. Many. You know, I've had heroes fall, and it's a genuine problem.
Right. Woody Allen.
Michael Jackson is one of my heroes that I believe has fallen.
Yeah.
I'll say it straight out loud. Yeah. But for me, it's very hard to give up my cancel culture, you know,
pitchfork.
cannot bring me to give up the album that is Thriller, because it's such an important part of my youth, my history, and who I am.
Yeah. So.
Well, we've beaten this one.
Yes.
On that note, before we all kind of say things that we're going to get arrested
before we get cancelled.
And maybe while us gets cancelled, let's wrap this one up. We've got reviews of Devil Wears Prada 2 coming up, as well as Mother Mary in our next podcast. So once again, thank you for listening or for watching. If you check us out on YouTube, we still put these out online. So they have an interesting viewing pattern. They spike and then they go quiet, and then some of the movies come back with a second release. So that's interesting. But anyway, thank you very much for listening to our podcast. And we will be back very soon with more movies. Until then, too many movies, too little time. Goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.